NFL podcast, where we fill out our brackets by choosing all of the teams with dog mascots. Super excited for today's show. I'm really excited for this one because we're joined by a new guest. We're doing this in studio in LA, which is always the best. And it's a guy I met last December,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
But then I saw you the second time in the Patriots locker room after the Super Bowl while I was trying to get a quote from a naked Rob Gronkowski. Then Kirk Morrison comes up behind me and says, hey. And
what up?
He is maybe the most – you're not even like a five-tool player, like a 20-tool player ESPN.
Right.
Like I try to write down all of the stuff you do for us in other places, and I'm not going to lie. I copied and pasted your Twitter bio. I didn't do a ton of research, but it's a lot. So Kirk was in the NFL for 8 years. 2005 draft, Oakland, where you're from, then Jacksonville, then Buffalo, really covering America's hot spots there. Mm. But now you are, okay, I'm going to list some of the things you do. Broadcaster for college football.
Yeah, ESPN.
Host for ESPN LA, mm-hmm. host for the Rams here in Los Angeles, host and analyst at Sirius XM NFL. You contribute to The Athletic. So what don't you do, Kirk Morrison?
Right now, I'm not consulting for NFL teams like I feel like I should, especially around this time of NFL free agency.
Oh, so you got takes.
Yeah, I got a lot of takes, man. So, no, I do a lot because I love the game of football. What it has given to me, not only my family, just everything. It's just, football is so much fun, Mina. And look, I don't take anything away. Baseball was my first love. You know, I picked up a glove at the age of 5, and I thought I would never put it down. And then all of a sudden, I got to about, let's say, 16, 17 years old, and my body started to feel out a little bit differently. And I could no longer make the throw from third base to first base. And that's when I knew that football was my calling. And then I was vertically challenged in terms of playing basketball. So of the major sports in North America, I chose football because I thought that would probably give me the better career path.
Interesting. Did you grow up an A's fan?
Grew up an A's and Giants fan.
Okay.
So I'm kind of both. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm not afraid to say I'm a Giants and A's fan. Okay. And it's similar to some people who grow up in different places where you have teams that are so close. Like the A's and the Giants, they like literally have a bridge, a 10-minute bridge that separates the two teams. Like,
yeah.
That's it. So I grew up in an era where both teams were outstanding, by the way.
All right. So last week we were in sort of the heat of free agency, trying to analyze the deals as they came in, talked about the biggest ones. So we didn't get a chance to really step back, look at the teams, look who they signed, look at who got better, who got worse, really think about it from a team perspective. So I'm really looking forward to doing that today with you, Kirk, kind of picking some of the winners and the losers in free agency.
Well, we can be lazy if you want. Let's just be lazy and just, oh, the Browns. Oh, my God. Everybody, the Browns. I mean, let's just go Super Bowl 54. Well, let's go get out. Yeah.
No.
Let's go give them the Lombardi. Let's give them the Lombardi right now.
You know what? Okay, well, let's talk about the Browns. So I'm going to pretend like the Browns aren't first on my list and
right.
that I'm not lazy. No, you know what? I was actually going to troll you.
Go ahead. Troll me all the time. I love it.
Start off by talking about my beloved fish tank.
The fish tank.
The Dolphins.
Oh, that's you. Yeah.
Although, you know, so, okay. People who listen to this podcast know that I am a fan of making a plan. And when I'm talking about NFL teams and
yes.
strategy and GMing, I like it when teams make a plan and stick to it. I like it when they
Correct.
Commit to something, when they say, hey, we don't want to be on the treadmill of mediocrity and go, you know, 7-9
right.
for 4 years. We're going to lose and we're going to lose hard.
Right.
And it's obviously we'll talk about the Giants when we get to the loser section, unless you're going to shock me and shock the world. But that's, to me, the contrast between what the Giants are doing, where it's completely unclear what
right.
how much they're trying to lose, if they're trying to lose, what a rebuild is, versus the Dolphins, who are very blatantly trying to lose. I mean, not trying to lose. That's the wrong way to put it.
Yeah, don't.
Not trying their hardest to win.
Correct.
Saving money. I mean, look, you know how much cap space? Well, the Tana, actually, now that they've got Fitzpatrick
yes.
signed, before they signed Fitzpatrick, and I think I saw somewhere that was like $11 million a year,
mm-hmm.
incentives up to. And I don't like the Fitzpatrick signing because he might mess things up and win a few games for them.
He's going to have a month
upsetting.
Where you're going to say, wow. You know,
upsetting.
Like, I think currently right now he's not currently. I think he is the quarterback in the NFL that has thrown for the most touchdown passes in NFL history without ever making a Pro Bowl.
I'm so excited to watch every Dolphins game.
I am too. I mean,
they got Albert Wilson too, so he's going to throw it like 400 yards down the field. But they, before they signed him, what I wanted to say was that they had $120 million in cap space next year and 10 draft picks. Mama like. So, you know, they obviously have let a bunch of guys walk. They let the Broncos overspend at Juwan James. Right. They let Cameron Wake go, Do you hate tanking? You're looking at me and I feel like you're not on Team Fish Tank with me.
No, see, because I don't know if it's Team Fish Tank. I think in the NFL, there is no truly tanking.
Yeah.
I think that the NFL is one of the great, I would say, leagues in all of the world that you do tanking differently. You do tanking by putting out talent that you actually know that's not ready yet, but you know in a year's time, you develop them. I saw that with the San Francisco 49ers last year. Okay. 2018, not 19, 2018, they were forced to throw out a lot of young players due to injuries and just things like that. So what happened? Those young players weren't ready, but they got ready throughout the season. Now, the only thing is that they didn't take the next step in 2018. I'm sorry, the 2017 season. So basically last season was supposed to be their second year of the process.
Yeah.
And it didn't go their way. And so now 2019, you got to start finding it. I think with Miami, it's a little bit different. And hear me out here, Mina, because the first thing I look at is the guy who's calling the shots now. Okay. It's not Joe Philbin.
Yes.
Okay. It's not Adam Gase. It's Brian Flores. And when you bring in a new head coach, especially coming from the tree that he is coming from now. You know, he's coming from a tree in which this isn't the Bill Parcells tree. Mm-hmm. It's an extension of a Parcells tree, if you want to call it. But he's coming from the Bill Belichick tree of how to construct a team, how to construct a roster. If you're talking about a guy who can get the most out of, I would say, retread or guys who don't know who they are. Like, you know, everyone comes to the NFL, Mino, as a young cub. Okay. We're all young cubs, honestly, unless you're a first round pick who people, you know, pretty much deem you, hey, you're that guy. Okay. Like if you're, you know, a defensive end drafted in the top 10, which we may see a couple of those guys in next month. You're drafted to go rush the passer, and that is your job. Like, you are one of the elite Cubs coming into the league.
Yeah.
Where I look at some other guys who will be drafted in the fourth, fifth round, or maybe drafted to a team a couple years ago, they lose a coach, lose a defensive coordinator. You're kind of swimming around the NFL trying to figure out, who am I? Where do I, you know, what tribe can I be a part of? I think that's what Brian Flores is going to bring to Miami. A bunch of guys who are kind of retread, cast offs, don't know too much. I think he's going to build the team, and we may be quite surprised how competitive they are in your tanking. Okay.
Yes.
Like that's the funny part, because we've seen it before. I saw it and the thing about it is just they weren't going to get over the hump.
Yeah.
But if I was playing against the Jets over the last couple of years in the Todd Bowles rebuild, they were still a tough team. They were a tough out. You saw them getting better. And that's why it's hard to say you call it a tank job sometime, because those guys play hard.
Yeah, let me, I think you're right. So tanking is different in football.
Yes, totally different.
The sample size is different. Guys are putting their bodies on the line. It's all different. The fan bases are different. It's not like the process in Philly where you have fans, or Knicks fans now, who are enlightened and delighted to lose. That just doesn't happen in football because they play so few games. To me, what it is a combination of two things. One, amassing cap space and draft picks, which is different from trying to lose. Okay.
Correct.
And that's something they're doing, and I love it. Okay. So there's that. And I think that's very important for a rebuilding team. It's why, like, when the Giants went out and signed Golden Tate, I was like, what the hell are you doing? So I like that. It's also, and this is, I think, cuts to what you're describing, having coaches in place who can manage through those times, who can say, hey, this year isn't about making it to the playoffs. We know that. We're not delusional. It's about finding some of those cast-offs, finding some of those young talent, finding a few guys from this year, coaching them, developing a culture. I mean, Brian Flores' assistant head coach is Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
That dude's, he's been through some L's. But, by the way, I'm looking at, I was checking that.
He's been through some L's, but he took the Detroit Lions to the playoffs
twice. Unfairly, by the way, fired coach in, like, recent
it's
NFL
ridiculous.
History. Although, when I look at the coaching staff page on the Dolphins, I'm reminded of how, for him, smiling is really like curving your lips 0.2 milliliters, because he looks so angry in his photo. He is such an angry looking dude.
He's the angriest. But you know what? He's a realist though.
Yes.
And so when I was doing games for NFL on Fox, I had my first couple years out of the NFL, I was like on the 6-7 team. Okay. And for people who are out there listening, the 6-7 team on like the Fox crew, you probably get like 5 or 6 games a year. So you probably get teams who are kind of at the bottom, you know, middle of the line teams. But I had a chance to sit down with, you know, Jim Caldwell a couple times, and they were in like a little funk, a little losing streak or whatever. And to sit there and hear a coach not make excuses.
Yeah.
That's why there are certain guys I pull for. Like, hey, coach, you know, why is this team not playing? Our offensive line's not blocking nobody. Yeah, they haven't blocked anybody all year. So if you don't block anybody, we're not going to win games. See that quarterback over there? I feel bad for Matthew Stafford. I don't know if I want to put him out there if we can't block. And I'm like, That's real. Like, some of you are like, oh, you know what? As a team, we're moving along. We're going to get some things fixed. Like, no, we're not blocking. Like, that to me is real coaching.
I just want to say this. Listeners to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, we must not let Brian Flores get Steve Wilks out of here after a year. We must protect this man with our lives. This is a multi-year rebuilding plan. I am bringing my sword.
Is that in the dictionary now?
Steve Wilks.
Yeah. getting Wilks.
Caldwell. I mean,
Caldwell,
you know,
or Wilks.
We can think of a few.
Well, I don't know.
Guys.
Caldwell was there for a while.
He was there for a while.
But Wilks didn't. Yeah.
Wilks is when you don't get a fair shot at something. Not that I think he was the right coach for the long-term situation or whatever, but listen, this team is going to lose a lot of games, and it is not Brian Flores' fault. Maybe, and look, maybe he's going to be a terrible coach. We'll see. Whatever. But I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I will. He has my sword. I'm like Brienne in Game of Thrones, and he's like, I'm like kneeling in front of him and saying, I will defend you. I will defend the tank. You sounded less enthused about the Browns than the world, who is anointing them Super Bowl winners and whatnot.
Well, I'm always big on let's let it play out. I'm just never, you know, so many people want to get their name out there and say, oh, I got it, the Browns, hey, they're going to win this, and the AFC North, and because what's happened now is that they've got expectations.
Big ones.
Expectations. And there's still some things I want to see get fixed. I got some friends who are on the team. You know, one of my buddies, San Diego State buddies, is the quarterback's coach who actually helped out Baker Mayfield last year, Ryan Lindley, who comes over with Freddie Kitchens now. So Freddie Kitchens is a first-year head coach. Remember, he's never...
Sort of.
Not even sort of. He's a first-year head coach in the NFL. Like, he's got to answer these questions. And it kind of goes back to your other point. And Steve Wilks is the defensive coordinator in Cleveland. And that's another guy who... going out there trying to prove what you saw in Arizona last year, that's not a representative of who I am as a coach.
Oh, he's going to crush it. Oh, the God.
So, yeah, and Monk, he was.
I love him.
That was my wide receivers coach in Jacksonville.
He can call plays.
So think about the. I hope I'm not going off on a tangent. So my
I'll get you hyped again. You were like trying to bring down the temperature on the Browns, and I'm like, Todd Monken.
Because I was in Jacksonville, right? My 2010 year was in Jacksonville. And this is one of the great things about the NFL is that you get a chance to have these relationships with coaches and you follow them wherever they go, whether they go to college or the NFL. Dirk Cutter was the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. Todd Monken was the wide receivers coach. So those two offensive minds right there, and going at it at practice, practice would be a big chatterbox because we were going at the offense going at the defense. So I'm fully aware of what Todd Monken has been able to do, especially in the college ranks now coming back. And it goes back to what you mentioned with Cleveland. They, to me, finally got not only the quarterback position right, but I think it's to a point where for the first time, we're not talking about them having to draft a quarterback. You know what I mean? Like every year was like, is this the guy for the future? How many more? Like now this offseason just goes to show you what every team I think wants. It goes back to our earlier conversation, Miami, New York, all the teams, even Arizona. If you're not for sure you've got the quarterback in place, how can you really build your team?
Yes.
How can you build your roster? Like last year, those teams that took those 5 quarterbacks in the first round last year, it's like they're like, you remember when you graduated from high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you came back, maybe after your, you know, freshman year of college, and you kind of walked through, you walked around like, yep, you see me. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in college. I finally feel like that's what Buffalo did. They went to, they they got Josh Allen. We don't have to worry about the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
They're actually, I like what they did,
but you know what I mean.
The Browns right now are the promised land. They're what every team looks at, and it's like, right. That's what we want to get to, where we've got the quarterback and he's on a cheap salary and we can go all in. We can do what the Rams did.
Right.
We can do the Seahawks did in 2012.
Yes.
You know, we can talk about those teams. But so, this is a team that said, this is our moment. We're going to do whatever it takes to capitalize on it. It just so happened that whatever it took to get Odell was not a lot. And I already ranted about the Giants last week. I will spare them my wrath right now. But, I mean, Odell, Landry, Callaway,
right.
Joke, like, how can you not be excessively hyped about this offense? We saw what Freddie Kitchens did with Baker. I fell in love every week. I mean, some of the stuff he was doing, bunching receivers to confuse defenses, getting him out of tight splits like that. Odell Beckham Jr. running a slant. I mean, Kirk, how can you not, like, I mean, there's like the best.
Yeah.
Nick Chubb.
I mean, the
front seven, they added Sheldon Richardson.
Sheldon Richardson to go with Kareem, to go with Olivier, and then obviously Myles Garrett is still a beast. I've always been a big fan of Christian Kirksey.
Yeah.
At linebacker. How does Steve Wilks, handle these guys?
That's
the only question. Yeah. What's going to be the difference now? Because this is now their third, fourth defensive coordinator in a row. So now whatever you've learned over the last couple of years, it's almost throw it out the window and start another new language.
That's true.
That's the thing that people have to remember. So to me, I think when you look at Cleveland, I believe this, their offense will be ahead of their defense for pretty much throughout the year. But I look at what John Dorsey was able to build, same thing when he was in Kansas City. And when you look at the top four scoring teams that were left last year in the playoffs, it was the Rams, it was the Chiefs, Saints, and the Patriots. All high-scoring offenses.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of defense, you know what I mean? But it was defense, it was enough, but it wasn't like that, Baltimore Ravens-type defense, that shut you down. So I think that's where Cleveland and John Dorsey were like, look, we can catch the defense up later, but for right now, we've got to score points. We score points, we can do enough defensively.
It's very modern.
And with all of those guys that you mentioned that they've acquired, so far this year, I think the Kareem Hunt signing is, is probably going to be one that when you look at them in November, December, you're going to be like, what? Are you serious?
For nothing.
Too. Yeah.
Which is, by the way, why look, there's a lot going on this week with the Tyreek Hill situation, which is still playing out, see how what happens there. Hunt got the 8-game suspension, comes back. Cleveland's basically paying nothing for him. They're going to get him off the fresh legs, which is why I always feel that the acquiring team should have to take on some sort of element of risk. It's a long, complicated discussion. When you look at who's winning and getting all the upside from this terrible situation, it's Cleveland.
And
they should be labeled as such, in my opinion.
They took a chance. And the chance is probably going to, honestly, I think, work out for them. But I think they're the Browns too. So it's like half of you feels like it's the Browns. Like if it was like the Patriots or the Cowboys, I think they would get more scrutiny. But because it's the Browns and what they've not accomplished over the last 20 plus years, it's like some people just like, okay. And you kind of move on from it. And I'm not trying to make light of the situation. But that is the team that we're talking about. Then you have a couple of splash, trades, draft picks, and now you're like, oh, wow.
They're the favorite to win the division.
People were talking about giving them the max number of national TV games next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's TV gold. Like, everyone gets five. We knew Cleveland was going to get you that Thursday night game in the middle of October where they're playing against the Steelers, right? And they're going to come close, and then Ben Roethlisberger is going to complete a pass at the end after having a horrible game, and he's going to go up there on the mic and say, man, that was a tough one, but, the Steelers, we found a way to pull it out. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it was. But luckily last year, though, Cleveland did win a game on a Thursday night, the little national TV game.
Awesome.
Remember, I got excited about it. I remember I was watching it at a bar and I was like, wow, that was huge.
Things have changed. People talk about the team, like when Odell was traded, if that had happened 3 or 4 years ago, people would be like, sucks for you. Punished Odell. That's what you get. Instead, people are like, ooh, lucky Odell. He gets to go to Cleveland.
Wow.
He gets to play with Baker Mayfield. This really worked out for him, and that's the discussion has completely evolved.
I remember TJ Ward, safety. Remember when he played there, and I remember when he first left, his comments were, I believe, I don't want to misquote him, but it was something to the effect of, when you got drafted to Cleveland, let's go do our time and then get out of there.
Oh, no.
It was similar to like, hey, I just, the college that basically chose me, this was the only scholarship offer I had or draft, you know, because I got drafted. You spend your time there, and once you graduate, you leave. That's how it was. So either you're going to get traded or you're going to sign somewhere else in free agency. But that's how it was, you know, seven years ago. Now
all of
a sudden.
I'll take the quarterback. Okay. Who are some other teams? So we talked about the, my beloved Dolphins.
Yeah.
The Browns. Who are some other teams who you like what they did? You feel like they were either smart or they got better?
Oh, man. It's a lot because I look at, I'll go quickly division, and I don't want to just bore people, but I look at Philadelphia and
my list. Yeah, so let's talk Eagles.
Yeah, I love what they're doing. Bringing back DeShaun Jackson gives him a deep threat, which they've needed. Look, Alshon Jeffrey is a good receiver, but I'm going to remember him dropping the pass, you know, against the Saints that in the wild card round in the divisional round that really, to me, was going to be the drive that Nick Foles puts the Eagles in a conference championship game versus the Rams. So, adding another weapon like DeShaun Jackson to go along with, you know, Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, obviously we know what Zach Ertz did last year at the tight end position. I'm still looking at them. They're probably going to draft a running back. I don't know when. I don't know how. They need a veteran back in there, but bringing back Jason Peters to, you know, at the left tackle position, re-signing him, 1 year deal.
Super smart.
You know, defensively, you know, Michael Bennett was part of them last year, but to kind of get away from that contract a little bit because he was a rotational player. Haloti Ngata, a rotational player. They've got their studs. Brandon Graham on the outside. I mean, on one defensive end, they're still in Barnett, who they drafted out of Tennessee. So you've got your studs there, linebackers.
Step for them.
Yeah. So to me, it's going to come down to the quarterback. This is one of the most important years
of Carson Wentz's career. Yeah. And giving him DeShaun Jackson. I combine their names like a couple, like a celebrity, you know,
Jackson.
Our Warren Sharp, who was on a couple weeks ago, pointed out on Twitter two of the routes that Wentz is best at throwing are the out and fly.
Yeah.
Oh, pretty nice to have DeShaun Jackson, who still to this day has the highest yards per route of like, at whatever age he is. I mean, like he's not that old, but just adds such a dimension to their offense, completely opens up the field for them.
Right.
And I don't know, were you on Twitter when Malik Jackson signed somebody? It was originally reported as 3 years, $10 million, and I screamed so loud my dog woke up because I could not. And then it was obviously it's 10 years or $10 million a year, which is still honestly not a bad value for Malik Jackson, who was very good last year. Having him next to Fletch, I mean, he's going to open up so much, you know, opportunity for Fletcher Cox on the inside there. That line is incredible.
Right. But you need to think, remember with Malik, he signed a big deal after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They won the Super Bowl 50 with the Denver Broncos, Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator in Denver. He goes to Jacksonville, and that's, to me, you have to have a certain mindset to play in Jacksonville. Okay? And
why
I was there.
That?
Well, because you got to understand, they always have to overpay for free agents. Okay, it's not a premier destination.
Yeah, we'll get to Foles in the
right.
In the
so
section.
You have to overpay for free agents. And then they overpay for a couple guys, you know what I mean? And then, you know, the playoff run, I said, man, that's a gift and a curse. It's a gift because I know all the fans in Jacksonville, they needed that.
Yeah.
They needed to feel like, hey, because I know a lot of the people still down there, and it was like, man, we wanted to be in the playoffs, let everybody know that we're a real franchise, right? But I said, the curse is that you've got a lot of guys on there, and I'm not trying to label them, but a lot of me guys.
Yeah.
Like, look at me. And we just won, and now, okay, will they still have that same fight and that same hunger? Or when things start to go bad, what will happen? Mm. And you just saw it. It just, that team was, that's not a four-win team, three or four-win team last year? Like, even with Bortles at quarterback, that's still not that type of team. And so Malik Jackson needed to get a new fresh face. I mean, a new place, fresh just beginning.
He was still good in Jacksonville.
He's
he had
good.
51 pressures. I mean, that's impressive. Obviously, again, him, Fletcher next to each other.
Yes.
You know, Fletcher will eat some of those double teams that should give him some opportunity. I mean, I think they're just, this is how, when you're already good, this is how you manage free agency. You're strategic about it. You don't go out and spend a ton of money.
Right.
You don't give stupid, none of these contracts look stupid to me, financially.
Right.
They got Darby back too.
Yeah,
you know,
Ron Darby.
A horrible, horrible free agency for cornerbacks. So I kind of made sense that they did that.
And thing about it is I was in a situation too, like Ron Darby and a couple other guys too, maybe Chris Long's in a situation as well. I'm comfortable where I'm at.
Yeah.
Think about how often can you say, Man, I've had the same head coach and defensive coordinator for the last 3 years. Like, think about it. Like, Jim Schwartz and Doug Peterson have been together 3 years. Yeah. Now, offensively, it's been a little bit different with Frank Reich leaving and John DeFilippo, and it's been changes on that part of it. But the main guy calling the shots, he's there. I like it. I'll sign back here because I'm comfortable. My family's here. I know here. I can go try to chase the money, but sometimes are you chasing money? Are you chasing happiness? I know what my role is here. I go somewhere else. I don't know what that role is going to be. So I like the move that they made. Obviously, we've talked about the Giants and their move. We'll just look at the NFC East teams, the Giants and a couple of their moves. The Golden Tate move still, to me, I'm just scratching my head a little bit. I don't get it. I don't understand it. They're in a rebuild, and I see it. And,
so why are you committing that much money to a 31-year-old wide receiver who, I mean, honestly, I'll also say I was bummed because there are a few teams that are contending that could really use Golden Tate. I thought he would end up in Indianapolis or something who didn't do, well, we'll get to that. But,
didn't do
so
anything.
I just, again, with the Giants, and I don't want to like belabor this because I've spent so much time last week complaining about them and talking about what they should have done. What's the plan? You know, I just have a plan.
Well, the plan is they got to draft a quarterback. They know that. Eli Manning is this is his last year. Yeah. He will be the bridge quarterback to whoever they draft.
You know what helps a young quarterback? The best young wide receiver in the NFL.
No, I think.
Also, by the time the young quarterback is ready to compete, Saquon Barkley is going to have run for 300,000 miles.
I mean, it's, like egos in the NFL, though. Like, people got to understand, like, it's so many egos. And I've seen it, and it's the part that I hate it the most. But if you look around, just really look, and you're like, oh, you're right. I see that. Dave Gettleman didn't draft Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
So whatever that Odell would do or get, that's not on his resume. Okay? That's not like, he's not my guy. And that's the egos of these general managers and head coaches. It's the same thing.
I mean, even you're right. You have to always consider this when you're talking about free agents, especially with GMs, because this is a thing we bring up often on this podcast, which is when we talk about quarterbacks, the GM, when we talked about Tampa Bay and Winston and why they're sticking with him, if the GM that brought you there is still in the building, you ain't going anywhere, which is why the Josh Rosen situation is so fascinating. We'll get to that. But you're right. This is all Gettleman. And if you're a Giants fan, I mean, I'd be ripping my hair out. Like, I'm going to go out of the division if you're, because this is a team that I feel
anywhere
like,
you want.
I don't praise this team enough on this podcast. Some of the fans get angry with me.
Who?
I love what the Bills did.
Yes.
I really like the moves they made to build around their young quarterback, who I've not always been super high on.
Right.
I do think he got better as the season went on. But I love, like, these are not extremely glamorous signings. Going out and getting Mitch Morse,
center,
Kansas City, great.
Yes.
Obviously, the offensive line in Buffalo was horrible.
Well, remember one of my good buddies, good friend of mine, Eric Wood, was the center they had for a long
lovely
time
guy.
Who retired. You love E. Wood. Yeah, great guy.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah, the red curly hair. We've teased him enough.
He looks like one of those like little angels in a Renaissance painting, if that angel was 300 pounds or whatever he is. He's probably lost like half of it now that he's retired.
Yeah, but he still looks good. He's doing college football, but he was an outstanding center, and I love competing against him in practice, and I knew that for many years he was going to be their guy. But he had a horrible injury, never really bounced back, and then he retired. And so the Mitch Morse, it fits Buffalo. And then who else I saw they picked up? Obviously,
they signed I struggle with his last name, Nsekwe, the tackle. He was he's bounced around. He's been on a zillion teams, Washington. You know, but he's been good. He can play tackle and guard. Actually, just looking at his numbers, he's been really good in recent years. Gives them depth on the line. Went out and got Tyler Kroft, tight end who can block. Again, bolstering production for Josh Allen. John Brown, deep threat. Cole Beasley. These aren't the flashiest signings in the world, but they make the team deeper.
Well, they make the team deeper, but to me, they got tougher.
Yes.
You think about it?
Totally.
Like those signings to me, when you mention all those names, and then one of the bigger names, probably maybe not in the production category for them, but he brings toughness, is Frank Gore.
How could I forget?
No, but just it's all Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. Like,
he's such a Sean McDermott guy.
This is all Sean McDermott guys. You got a little known John Brown, you know what I mean? Who had, you know, fantastic years with Bruce Arians, not so much in Baltimore. Now it's a free start for him. He's got a quarterback in Josh Allen who can probably be the only guy who can outthrow him as fast as he is. But Frank Gore gives them the toughness that they need. You get a little bit more along the offensive line. And this, to me, and Cole Beasley gives them what the Patriots have been doing to them for so many years, having someone who can man the middle of the field, okay, in the inside of that slot. The Stevie Johnson was a guy who I was on one of my teams, and he was probably one of the best slot route runners I've ever seen. Like, just you couldn't guard him. He just was that slippery. Cole Beasley reminds me of that, but also he's going somewhere where he feels appreciated. You know, we heard his comments coming out of Dallas, and I think that's what Sean McDermott is building, that culture around there. It's about a bunch of guys who are, I won't call them castoffs, but they're a bunch of guys who probably weren't respected enough on their team, but they go to Buffalo, and I think that they will exceed expectations. I'm not saying that Buffalo is going to win their division, but this is one of those teams that falls in that 7 to 10 wins. Now they can fall on the lower end is the, I think the bottom is 7, but I think the top is 10. They get to 11, they've overachieved. But you can definitely say what Sean McDermott has done just in a couple years has put this team in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, with the, it's not just about building around the young quarterback while he's cheap, going all in, getting talent, whatever. It's about evaluating him, right? Because it's about putting enough pieces around him to the point where you can actually get a sense of who he is, what he's capable of. Like, we always say on this podcast, I have no idea, we always say, me and my dog, I have no idea who Josh Rosen is as an NFL player because he was impossible to evaluate. Josh Allen was not in a good situation either and deserves lesser, I think, but some caveats as well when you look at his rookie season. That's not going to be the case after next year. Next year, we're going to be able to look at him with real NFL players, a real NFL line, and say, okay, this is who Josh Allen is.
Yeah, but I feel like I don't want to call it a throwaway year.
The first year, you mean?
Well, the second year.
Oh, the second. It's not. Yeah. No, they should be able to compete.
I just don't want it called a throwaway year because I have to. Because to me, the sophomore slump is real. Because you have that rookie year and everything is thrown at you.
The bar is low,
but all of a sudden now, I have two defensive quality control coaches on the coaching staff. And as we look at our division, and people always say, what do coaches do in the months where they can't be with the players right now because of the collective bargain agreement, doing, you know, off-season work? Remember, players aren't allowed are not allowed in the facility to, you know, work with the coaches until an April date. I forget which date it is. Mm. And usually all the teams that have new head coaches get to start 2 weeks earlier than the rest of the league. So, you know, teams like, you know, obviously the Miami Dolphins would be one of those teams. Who else would it be? Who else had a new coach? Cincinnati will be another one. Yeah. So you have those teams, right? But I bring that up because I've seen coaches, literally, like assistant coaches, assistant guys who probably don't even know their name. I'm like, hey, I would be in the building. This is before CBA, where you can be in the building all offseason. You just go in there. Hey, well, what's going on? Because these are usually the younger coaches on the roster. I mean, on the staff.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're still, you know, cutting their teeth. And usually we're at the same age too, cause these guys, we weren't playing in the league anymore. So, you know, I'm like 24, 25. He's like 26, 27. So, like, hey, what you got going on? Oh, nothing, man. I'm just over here watching this tape. Like, what you doing? I'm doing all Alex Smith cut ups of 2005. Like, Alex Smith. Yeah, it was his rookie year. We're just watching every throw. So he had a cut up of Alex Smith's every single throw, all his throws to the right, all his throws to the left, this formation, that formation. And I was just like, so what are you doing with it? I'm going to build a package with it. So when we hit a scout, I'm going to say, this is who he is. This is what he did. This is where he was at his best on third down. This is the plays that he was successful, not successful. That's what those quarterbacks are going to have to go to. And I'm talking about the first rounders. And same thing with Josh Allen. That's why I always say the sophomore year is the slump. We've heard it before so many times because it is real. Because what you did in your rookie season, they're going to take that away. Same thing with Lamar Jackson. I think that's why it's such an enigma is because people are going to – what you did that rookie year, that was great.
Josh,
it's going to take it away. It's same, we did it
Josh
with,
Allen is a great example of that, by the way, because – the running, like I felt like defenses were not game planning for his running at all. They're absolutely going to take that. He's going to get punished if he runs like that.
You know, me being here in Los Angeles, I had a chance to see it with Jared Goff. Now, on the upside was that Jarrett had a new head coach in his second year, which was like, all right, whatever you did in your first year, we're going to throw that all away.
Right.
And so actually his second year in the NFL, which was his first with McVay, was truly like his
rookie
year.
And then his third year was like, how are we going to adjust?
See, because Jarrett was okay two seasons ago.
Yeah.
And then last year, which is, it was year three for him, was really, to me, his second year, which was really...
I would argue it was last year when defenses finally started making adjustments. Yeah.
Start to adjust. Now, think about down the stretch defenses started to catch up. So, yeah.
Well, listen, before we get down the stretch of this podcast, we're going to take a quick break. So, as always, if you leave a review with a question on the iTunes page, and it's a nice review, something that my mom likes, we will answer it. So, I'm going to take a few now.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right, we'll try to breeze through things because we're going a little long here today. Lots to talk about though. Hayden D20 asks, how will Daryl Bevel's play calls disappoint Lions fans? I'll just say this quickly. I've been defensive, so I don't know if you know this, Kirk. I'm a big Seahawks fan.
Okay.
That's probably why he's asking me about that. And so I saw a lot of Daryl Bevel, and I actually think he's pretty underrated. In fact, when you look back at those 4 or 5 years during Russell Wilson, the Seahawks finished like top five in offensive DVOA every year, and it wasn't just because of Marshawn Lynch, especially some of those years. It will be more run-centric. The Lions are going to evolve in that way, but I think it's more modern than people think. I'm a Bevel supporter.
Yeah, and you got to understand, too, I think with Bevel, tell me the wide receivers that he really had to work with in Seattle. I mean, Doug Baldwin was really still coming to his own, but it was a mix of what Jermaine Kearse, a mix of
Golden
Tate, like Sidney Rice. And so
it
wasn't somebody that's just like, wow, like just blew you out of the water kind of thing. And so now I want to see how can he develop, Marvin Jones and Galladay, some of these guys Tywan Taylor, I think, Galladay, who always mix up, but these guys, the wide receivers there, what do they get out of this offense now? What is it going to be? Is it going to be more tight end centric too as well? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think with Matthew Stafford, how do you take and relieve some of the stress from him as well? But I think as a play caller, I think Matt Patricia wants to get to a more run centric type of thing. He wants to keep that defense, pretty much off the field a little bit, to take some drives away. You know what I mean? And then think about it. What slows down Khalil Mack on one side now? You know what I mean? What slows down this new Packers defense and what they bring? Minnesota. I think the AFC North kind of changed. I'm sorry, the NFC North changed to what this pass happy league because teams played indoors. A couple of them did, and it was always warm. And Aaron Rodgers. Now I think you got to go back to the old school. Mm. Think about it. Just why not be able to run and pound it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right about Patricia. Whether it's the right strategy, we'll see. Bozo Suzuki asks, is Peyton Manning a coach killer? And then he explains, did his brilliance make us overrate Mike McCoy and Adam Gase? That's a long conversation. I will just say this. Mm. So Peyton Manning, Kirk, he got basically got Adam Gase hired in New York.
Right.
So I think that'll be the true test of this is kind of it for Gase for me. This is his make or break moment. And there's certainly we haven't gotten to that team in free agency, but which I didn't mind. I mean, I think they overpaid, but they made good signings kind of. They overpaid a lot. But anyways, they had the money.
They did.
Are you a Gase guy?
I'm a Gase guy because of the people who I've talked to about Adam.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I'll just go back to the Chicago year, when he was the offensive coordinator there, and just the stories that I had coming out of Chicago were like, look, I was like, tell me about Adam Gase, cause he was got the label of, what he did with Peyton Manning and all that stuff. But it's like, no, you got to understand what he did with Jay Cutler. That to me was really, he made Jay Cutler a leader. He turned Jay Cutler into a leader of a football team. And that offense was outstanding, but it was because he challenged Jay in a way that Jay, who was one of the smartest kids we know, a Vanderbilt guy, you can't tell me anything I don't already know. He challenged Jay Cutler to a point where Jay Cutler looked like a outstanding quarterback. And I thought I give him more props from what he did there. And then Ryan Tannehill that first year, if Ryan Tannehill doesn't get hurt and then start Matt Moore, you know, the Dolphins versus Pittsburgh. I know I'm opening up an old wound for you, Mina. But
we
forget about Adam Gase that year with Tannehill, where the team was they weren't you know, lighting the league on fire, but they were a playoff team, and we know how hard it is to make the playoffs. So he's done it; he's been successful, and now he gets to do it his way and with a quarterback who I think has all the tools.
I'm a big Sam fan too.
Yeah,
I'm Darnold Hive, and we can get
and Lev Bell.
I mean, that's gonna be fun. But Jesse Jordan asks, what's your favorite way to add heat to food? Salsa, sriracha, horseradish, or Thai chili? I'll go sriracha there.
Mm.
What's your pick out of those? Or do you have like a hot sauce you like?
I like Frank's. I can go Frank's.
I like Crystal.
Crystal is a little bit different because it goes 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah, I like that.
Like you could put a little bit, like it's different how many shakes that you need. Like one or two shakes is like mild. Four shakes is medium. Now, when you just start going heavy, that's a little bit. But it just depends. I think salsa, it just depends. Like,
yeah, what kind of food are you
eating? Yeah, what are you eating, too?
You're obviously not going to put salsa on, you know, Asian food or something.
Right.
Narcophagus asks, this is a personal question just for me, but I'm curious if you remember this game. What's your least favorite memory of a Seahawks-Rams game? So there's a lot of really horrible.
Seahawks-Rams, which one?
Well, he's asking me, like, what's my least favorite memory from being a Seahawks fan of playing the Rams?
Okay.
There are many. Okay.
Right.
Just so many miserable games. Even during the latest run with Wilson, for some reason, whenever Seattle would go to St. Louis in particular, horrible things would happen. The one that stands out in my mind was in 2014.
Yeah.
Got lit up by Austin freaking Davis. And the worst moment, it was... first of all, I have this unfortunate...
Oh,
dude, please. I remember this like yesterday. I have a trigger... like a sensitivity to where I'm renting the Rams, I scream, they're faking it every time because as a Seahawks fan, they literally faked it every game. And the one that really is a horrible memory for me
I know where you're going. Yeah.
It was a fake punt return.
Yes.
It wasn't a fake punt. It was a fake punt return to distract the team from the real return, which was happening 30 yards.
That it
was
knew it.
The most horrifying thing I've ever seen. It was like every horrible scene in Black Swan where they're tailing out their nails and shit. Like, I had to cover my eye. Even thinking about it, I get chills.
Yeah, that was the one, I think it was Tavon Austin. So I think it was, what happened was you had two returners back there, but everybody was looking at the main returner who was back there kind of waving. Yeah, who was like looking up at the ball and everybody.
Yeah,
so everybody's
like being like real acting. Like,
but yet the ball was kicked to the other side of the field.
Freaking nightmare. Yeah.
I knew where you were going because that was the most embarrassing one, and you lost by like just a couple points too. So it was like that touchdown was the one that kind of lost.
I didn't remember the details. I appreciate
I think
really
Trey Mason ran over y'all
driving
too one time.
Oh, we really don't. Okay. The fifth question I think is a good segue to get back into winners and losers in free agency, and it's from Jeremiah 9191213. I hope that's not like a password or something, Jeremiah. What the hell should the Packers do? So the Packers are on my winners list.
In terms of what?
I think he means just generally. Sort of broader epistemological sense, perhaps. I like what they did in free agency, which was very un-Packers-like.
Yeah, they re-signed Mercedes Lewis. They went out and signed
bunch of dudes.
Look at these contracts. They got a tight end. Let's see. On the defensive front.
Okay, so they signed a lot of guys. So Preston Smith.
Preston Smith, that's what it was. They get Preston Smith
as a linebacker.
I close my eyes, and when I open them up sometime, I'm like, whoa, it looks like DeMarcus Ware. Like, he wears 94. No, I'm serious. I mean, hey, look, they have the same body type. They kind of play similar game. It was just he was in Washington. That wasn't a team that was on a lot of people's radar. I think now he goes to Green Bay, and I think you're going to get a better Preston Smith than what people probably didn't know who he really was.
Yeah.
I knew who he was.
Yeah, so it's $52 million, but really 16 guaranteed. And he's a guy where if you look at the numbers, it's not that impressive. Just 4 sacks last year. But if you watch him, he's always in the mix. He's always getting to the quarterback. And we at ESPN have these great statistics. There's pass block win rate, and then there's this pass rushing statistic. It's the same two sides of the same coin. And he ranks really highly on that metric. You guys can look it up on ESPN.com. Another guy who ranks really highly on that particular metric is Za'Darius Smith, who they paid a lot of money to, probably too much money, honestly. They overpaid him coming out of the Ravens. But another guy who, yes, maybe 2018 he was better than previous years, but I feel like even though, yes, he had 8.5 sacks, but he had way more quarterback hits, which is usually, as we've talked about on this podcast a good sign that he's not just getting lucky, right? So I really like him, and I just love the fact that they're committed to making that front seven better.
Well, you got to understand, too, Rex Ryan's influence, you're starting to see it. Because Mike Pettine is coming from his coaching tree, right?
Okay.
So Mike Pettine is bringing that New York Jets type of blitzing coming at you. How do you do it? You got to bring guys who know how to do it. Za'Darius Smith, like you mentioned, same thing with Preston Smith. I mean, like you're going to get guys now who know how to bring it. I mean, Kyler Frackle. I mean, I'm sorry, no, he was
Fackrell. They call him Sackrell.
Yes, Sackrell. Yeah.
Right. That's a dude who every time I watch the Packers game this year, I was like, who did that?
Yeah. Well, because he was at Utah State. So they had another guy who was awesome. So I used to get him and his other linebacker, kind of a similar name, I forget, but both those guys were outstanding at Utah State. They were just be blitzing off the edge, up the middle. They were two off the ball linebackers. But Kyler Frackle is now another guy who can be in there.
I know.
Kyler Fackrell. But he is another guy who's going to be, to me, going, that is going to bring havoc.
You remember how
David Harris was for many years with the Jets? So to me, that these signings are, to me, Mike Pettine getting the defense that he wants
now. That he wants to have.
And look, no offense, but, you know, Clay Matthews is long gone. He's passed, you know, this game has started to pass him by.
Is he free agent?
Yeah,
he's unsigned.
Wow, so he's going to be one of those guys that he'll be around this summer.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I know we got so much to talk about, but just like, there's this group of players now who I don't have to bring them in right now, right away.
And he's kind of on that
tier. He's on that tier. Like, I can sign Clay Matthews on September 7th, 2 days before a game, and he's going to give me 20 plays of nickel defense, and I don't have to, you know what I mean? There's going to be some guys who can do that as well, who just realize that their teams aren't building around you. They don't need you in the building right now. Your resume of 11, 12 years is already out there on tape. I don't need to. Oh, let me see if he can come. No, you know what he can do already.
You know what he can do. You know he can, give you, like you were saying, just like 30 snaps or whatever you need out of him.
Same thing with, remember, Khalil Mack came in off the street on his first game against the Packers last year.
That was quite a different piece. We did leave out one signing that I really, really loved in Green Bay, which was Adrian Amos. Okay, divisional rival.
Divisional rival will take
the
away.
The money, like compared to what we saw, Earl Thomas, Tyrann Mathieu, and then obviously Landon Collins get, he was an absolute bargain. And he's not, the flashiest safety, but he's so consistent, I think. He is plug and play. Like he's not gonna, he's not like a ball hawk. He's not gonna get a ton of interceptions necessarily. He's not gonna be jumping routes. But he just solidifies that secondary for them.
Right.
And I think that's the kind of signing that we're going to look at in the winter and be like, wow, Packers really genius to that.
Well, I think about it, who he's replacing. Remember Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who they traded last year?
Oh, he got signed for nothing.
Nothing. You know what I mean?
Three
like,
and a half.
It's, you're starting to look now. And if you're a Packers fan, cause I know a lot of people weren't like, why is he just didn't fit.
Yeah.
He didn't fit in what they were doing. Now you bring in Amos, who now fits what you can do, give you some, flexibility and coverage flexibility a little bit.
Yeah, he can do anything. I mean, they played two deep under in Chicago, and Pettine, I think he plays one.
But he's going to play some deep. He's going to play some, like, all out, make guys have to cover a little bit. And same thing with Bryce Callahan as well, who's with Chicago. It's like Chicago had some outstanding defensive players last year. A couple of them are going to be gone. Obviously, Bryce, he signed away as well. He goes to, did he go to Buffalo?
Bryce Callahan?
Yeah.
I want to say the Raiders? No, that's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm still getting caught up on all of these guys, but even still.
Denver.
That's what it was. So Bryce and Kareem Jackson. Yes. So those two guys are coming together. But that's what I'm saying. Like, these guys now are starting to reap the benefits of what winning does.
Yeah.
Winning, like, man, I want that guy. Cause now people can see you, evaluate you, like, oh, I see what you do in that defense. Yep. You could do that over here.
Yep. And I think, it's so hard for elite defenses to repeat year to year, and teams always underestimate that. And that's how you get a Jacksonville kind of situation. And I love Chicago. I love that defense. Obviously, they still have most of the pieces, but they're going to feel the pain of losing an Adrian Amos, a Bryce Callahan. These guys, these role players who really, because that's a very complicated defense, the Vic Fangio scheme. When you lose that sort of institutional knowledge, that definitely, it hits. And I just like that the Packers, they've over the last few years, obviously they're very famous under Ted Thompson for not signing a lot of guys, not spending money.
Right.
But they also they spent so many draft picks on cornerbacks, and this year my hope is that they get Aaron Rodgers a hotshot young wide receiver.
Wide receiver?
Or tight end or something. I don't know. But
he
needs a
running back.
Oh, dude, Aaron Jones is great. I love Aaron
Jones.
He doesn't scare me.
No.
Well,
he doesn't, like, Aaron Jones is good, but he doesn't scare me. And that's the one thing I wish the Packers.
Doesn't scare you because they never use him.
Right. Jamal Williams, you know what I mean? I think maybe, you know, I think other guys can come in and step in to a point where. Maybe it's because the commitment to the running game is not there for me. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, that you're 100% right.
That may be, and maybe that's what Matt LaFleur is going to have to come in and tell Aaron, like, look, this isn't a 7-on-7 tournament. You know what I mean? Like, we have to, and I don't care how much we're paying you. You're the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Well, first of all, you're the highest paid player in the NFL, I should say, yeah. Per year average. You have to listen to what we're trying to do because. That's what I mean when I tell you it doesn't scare me is that Aaron Jones can run for 100, 200 plus yards. And to me, you're like, I'd rather him do that than Aaron throw for 400. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because if you're taking away Aaron, I mean, if you take away Aaron Jones, I mean, you get more Aaron Rodgers.
I
want to see more balance within the offense.
It'll be interesting because I don't think free agency told us much about the offense. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do in the draft because it often kind of gives you an insight into to where they're going. You talked a little bit about the Lions earlier in terms of just Patricia Stafford and what they've been up to. How do you feel? Because I have a section kind of where I just wrote question.
Right.
Because I'm like still thinking through how I feel about where they are and what they did. The Lions obviously went out and made a pretty big splash, throwing a ton of money at Trey Flowers.
Yes.
Getting that New England Midwest reputation.
Had to.
So you think they had, okay, well, I want to hear about that. And then they paid Justin Coleman and Danny Amendola a fair amount of money. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're high on the Flowers signing.
Yeah, I'm high on that one. Because
even considering how much they paid him, you think it was worth it?
I think that you need a guy. See, the one thing that, you know, coaches from the Belichick tree, they need guys who understand the culture. They need guys who are going to be in the locker room and say, hey, let's go. You know, when Matt Patricia's telling them, hey, we got to go practice in sub-Arctic temperatures outside in Detroit, get ready for a game. You need guys like Trey Flowers who bought into Matt Patricia.
That's such a good point, by the way, because I remember when Andrew Hawkins was on the show and he talked about how he put his hands in his pockets when he was cold in New England and was like, what are you doing? And when Patricia tried to do the same thing, all you heard were complaints and anonymous players being like, yo, it's this guy. What the hell does he think he's doing? And it's like, you can't pull off that kind of tough guy.
Unless you get a little general.
Unless you've got, yes.
You need a little general.
Yeah.
You need a general like Trey. Danny, another general on offense now.
You need somebody to a point.
Yeah. Well, we used to call them feds, or right? Guys who have a direct connection to the higher ups. Yeah,
were they hated?
You just knew.
Who's the fed on the Raiders?
Like, it's just certain guys you knew that just
not you.
Certain quarterbacks you always knew, like the backup quarterback. Like, man, it could be the feds. Like, whatever you say in the locker room, for some reason, how does it get to the head coach?
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? So, you know, but you need guys that understand the Patriot way, you know, and Brian Flores is going to go through that, obviously. But watching Matt Patricia now in year two, all the rumblings were people who were saying, what? Players who, man, what are we doing here? What's going on? Like, there's a reason why. So you bring Danny Amendola to say, hey, you know, look, I played with Tom, you know, Matthew, this is what me and Tom did. This is how we were able to do this. Trey Flowers, same thing. Hey, look. Trey Flowers is basically saying, I got paid because of Matt Patricia. Okay. He lined me up and if you don't believe me, you guys once had a guy by the name of Kyle Van Noy here and you couldn't put him in anywhere to be productive.
And now he's great.
Now all of a sudden you look at Kyle Van Noy, he's probably going to hit the free agent market next year and get a ton of money. So you need players like that to walk around the locker room. And then all of a sudden, if I'm a young buck, okay, I'm a young puppy, second year, first year with the Lions, Trey Flowers walks in and I'm just going to watch him. I'm looking at him. All right, dude just goes to work. Listens to what coaches has to say. I'm like, all right, so that's what I got to do to get paid.
I see.
That's what I got to do to get paid. Like,
it is amazing.
Instead of going there looking at Ziggy Ansah at the training table. You know what I'm saying?
He's also out there, obviously. Probably one of the top free agents.
But,
it is funny, by the way, like how, God, if you're a free agent, going to the Patriots gets you that next contract. Like, you've been following this whole college admissions scandal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is huge.
The Patriots are like the, I don't know what the agency is called, that gets you into college or whatever and bribes your way into college. That's what the Patriots are. Like, if you're a veteran, I don't mean in a shady sense, relax.
Right.
But, like, if you're a veteran, you're like, all right, I just got to spend 1 year at the Patriots, and then, boom, I get in. I get paid. I get into, you know, USC or whatever. Like, that's... that's the function that they serve to all the, I mean, look at the deals. Trent, we'll get to Trent Brown.
That's why, you know, that's one of the things I regret in my career, Mina, by the way.
Never playing on the Patriots?
Well, never playing for the Patriots, but I had a workout set up with them, but Buffalo offered the contract first. And I'm like, why do I go to New England to work out where the money's already here on the table? You know what I mean? And they did it to a point where I was like, man, do I go up there and work out for them? Or do I take the contract that's already out there on the table? I went for the contract on the table. I spent 2 years in Buffalo, which was great. But what would those 2 years have been like had I been a New England Patriot?
Yeah.
But this was the lean Patriot years, though.
Okay.
This was no. They went to a Super Bowl. They didn't win, but this wasn't that.
Didn't have the same impact of, like, you know, padding your resume in advance of the payday. You know who did that? Revis, man.
Yeah, that's
one
what
year in New England, then he got paid.
Well, you can say Revis. You can also say Brandon Browner did it. You can say who's, you know, one of your former Legion of Boom guys. No, he did it once. Who else? It was a couple other guys that just went up there for 1 year. All of a sudden, it looked so attractive, and then they left out. You're like, how does that happen?
You know what it's like? It's not, forget the college admissions thing. That was a bad, flawed analogy. But this is what I thought of when I did the Revis thing. I was thinking, it's like when an actor does, like, a really serious movie.
Okay.
And they're not getting paid a ton of money, but then they get, like, an Oscar.
Yeah.
And then they book the Marvel movie after that because they're famous from the, like, independent film. That's what it's like to play for the Patriots. Speaking of the Patriots, what's going on with the Colts? The other New England Midwest team. What are they doing? They got $77 million as of today. So on one hand, I completely worship at the altar of Chris Ballard.
Right.
I think he's incredible. Everything he's done, I just think he's phenomenal. Funchess?
Yeah.
$13 million? They re-signed
some
of their guys.
They got a ton of draft picks, though, too.
Yeah, but they got, like, a zillion dollars.
Yeah.
Like, you can roll some of that over, but, like, you can compete now. You've got Andrew Luck.
But I look at Ballard and Dorsey. You know, think about these two guys, you know, just what they've created in their new situations. You know, Chris Ballard, team, they go to the playoffs, and we'd be hard-pressed to name five or six starters on offense and defense. You could probably do that. I could probably do that. But, I mean, the average person, because you're like, who were these guys last year?
Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, we have a focus on them. But I think it's also, too, do you want to interrupt the culture that you're building?
Right. So, I know, that was like when people were pegging Lev Bell to them. I'm like, nah.
Right.
Like, come on.
That culture.
You could have signed Adrian Amos. Like, you could have bolstered the pass rush. You could have added a slot receiver Golden Tate.
But I think he's going to be a guy... Chris Ballard, who is now, I call it, this is now as we enter the Costco portion of free agency.
Okay.
The deals and bundles, okay? I think they looked at last year in the playoffs and what happened, Mina, they ran out of depth. They had frontline guys, but they had nothing behind them. I think this is where they add the depth now. They're going to get some more signings, and it won't be the sexy names. It's just, okay. Like, one of my best friends is a big-time Cowboys fan. He's been sitting over there like, what are we doing? You went to the playoffs. You have an outstanding young core of players. Some teams don't need
to. You're going to have to
pay. Right, who are you going to have to pay? Right.
Very soon.
So you don't have to necessarily go out and get all of these guys and free. Like, you go like.
$7 million.
It's a lot of money. Trust me. But you start to look around, you're like, man, Marlon Mack at running back, that's not too bad.
He's good. He's very
good. You start
underrated.
Looking at the offensive line. Yeah,
Rick
we did
Sides.
That last year. We get Quentin Nelson and all these guys.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know what? Wow. You know what? We stole Eric Ebron for a couple million bucks from, Detroit. And guess what? He's a Pro Bowler. You know, 10 plus touchdowns receiving. So to me, if I'm Chris Ballard, why go out and try to spend and look at the culture that I think he has something in which, for me, Mina, you start to find a way to reward your own guys. that with that 77
and they
million.
Did. I mean, like, they went, they paid Mark Lewinsky, former Seahawks offensive lineman, mm-hmm. who left Seattle, and of course now he's good.
Pierre Desir,
who yes. I actually picked as my, before free agency began, they asked us at the NFL Insider panel or whatever to pick like an under the radar player who we mm-hmm. liked. I picked him as an under the radar player, not as really? Like one signing from the team. But he good. He's good.
He's good.
Another
yeah.
former Seahawks. But so play, Marcus
paying
Hunt.
Paying your own guys.
Decent. Paying your own guys. Okay. Well, look, I don't want to, I'm definitely not entirely down on them because I do like what they're doing. I like everything they're building and I love paying your own guys.
Right.
I just wish they'd done a little, just because they have so much money, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Like on the other side, you've got the Niners who are going out and paying Kwon Alexander $3 billion.
Hit the Kwon. Hit the Kwon.
Seriously. it was $13 million a year.
Right.
He's good. He's a linebacker. I mean, no offense.
No,
sir.
I'm still shocked, especially him coming off the torn ACL.
Kwon
Alexander.
I mean,
I just look at, you know, for me, if a team kind of lets you go, why?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Tampa basically let him walk. I mean, Lavonte David's still the star there. I think Kendall Beckwith, another linebacker that they played at LSU as well, kind of emerged. And now, you know, it's like Kwon Alexander, hey, you know, you're a free agent. The Niners had to do something. Obviously, after the Reuben Foster situation, they had to let one go. So
right.
they're basically paying the contract of what they would have gave Reuben
Foster.
They just kind of accelerate and give it to Kwon Alexander. But when you think about it, the breakdown of it, it's truly just a one-year contract, 2 years. I mean, that's what the 49ers have been doing. I looked at their contracts. It's like 1 year with all these different options.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I saw. Yes.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit appeased when I saw Kwon Alexander can be 1 year, 14 and a half.
Yes.
That's fine.
That's fine.
You know, and like they do a really good job. Like the Jimmy Garoppolo contract is similar. They can get
mm-hmm.
out of that. Even the D4 deal, which I thought was, when I saw it, I gasped
it.
Because that dude – I'm not all in on.
Right.
They can get out of it.
They can get out of it.
So
yeah.
you're totally right to point that out. Tim Coleman contract was very cheap.
Same thing. They got them with a bargain.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. These are bargain shopping right now that
yeah.
the 49ers are doing. They're adding depth. They're not spending a ton of money. And if it doesn't work out year, 2 years, you're able to get out of that contract instead of just trying to beat a dead horse.
Well, your point on Reuben Foster is really important too, because I think when you look at a lot of these overpays, you can usually trace it to a mistake.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
A guy they take a guy because they messed up on drafting mm-hmm. the guy or signing the guy. And that brings me to the last team that we're going to talk about today. So the Raiders pay Trent Brown the GDP of
Woo.
Dubai. No, they made him the highest paid left tackle. And my first reaction to that was, but they just took a left tackle in the first round. I don't want to use the word mistake. It's still very early.
It was a mistake.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Bring it. Bring it.
No, it was a mistake. And we knew that early on. It was a mistake. And so now they're going to move him to right tackle. Trent is going to be on the left.
Cut Donald Penn.
Yeah, they cut Donald Penn. I mean, the writing was right there on the wall for everything. It was right there in front of us. You saw it early on. Colton Miller was not going to be able to hold up in that division. I mean, he was just getting steamrolled. I think he had you looked at the Raiders, both their tackles, because when Penn went down, I think Brandon Parker, who another guy who they drafted, both those two guys alone, they were just walking flags. It was almost a flag football game the way they were playing. They should have kept yellows in their pockets and just throw it on the ground. But
save the ref some time.
Seriously. But so the Raiders, I understand what they did. I like their signings, by the way.
You got Antonio Brown for freaking peanuts. You can't, we already won free agency.
You
I don't care.
They won because they got the best receiver in the NFL.
And the best receiver in free agency in Tyrell Williams. In free agency, like the best available.
Yeah. I like the Tyrell signing as well. That works for me. But I think I'm really excited. And because, like I said, maybe it's because of me being a little bit of a homer in this sense of watching this kid progress and then remembering his conversation on Hard Knocks back in 2016, LaMarcus Joyner, where, you know, he's sitting down in a room, you know, contemplating not playing football. And he's sitting down there with Jeff Fisher, and I always remember this part of Hard Knocks, was that, like, Coach, I don't do this for money. He's like, I love this game. If you want me to be a number two, I'm not a number two. I'm a number one. And I'm going to show you each and every day. He's like, Coach, what am I not doing? What I got to show you? Like, he was contemplating quitting because he puts himself at a high standard. played his butt off that next year.
Yeah.
You know, last 2 years, and then, you know, last year got the franchise tag. And so that is the kind of signing for the Raiders who they need. Is the one thing about the Raiders, I said this too, with their signings and with the trades, they got good football players who have a lot to prove still.
Yeah.
And not like guy, not proven commodity. Remember they went out and got like Charles Woodson and Lamar Woodley.
Yeah.
And Justin Tuck. We're like, man, them some old Topps cards.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But they got guys who are, you know, who got a lot of tread still on the tire. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, wow, you know, that they still got the, you know, the sticker still on the tires. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't. They're just now getting into their NFL bodies and their NFL experiences. Even with Antonio Brown, I look at him the same way. It's a new start for him to almost feel like a rookie all over again. So I'm impressed with what they're doing. Now it's just what they handle with these draft picks.
Do you know Justin Tuck?
Yeah, I know Justin Tuck, yeah.
My only encounter with, I feel like I may have said this on the podcast, but the only time I've ever met him was, have you been in those revolving doors, like in an office building?
Yes.
You know? In New York, in the, I think it was a Bloomberg building, he got in the revolving door, and instead of waiting, I accidentally got in the same time as him. So I was,
y'all was like,
so I almost like, he was like, what are you doing?
So I almost waited out.
It was a very unfortunate interaction. That's my Justin Tuck story. I'm with you on Joyner. I think he brings leadership to a secondary that's entirely devoid of leadership or defense. Yes. Let's be real. And I like that he can play both free safety and slot, which obviously versatility is the name of the game. They got a ton of work to do on defense. A ton of work. I mean, the offense is getting there, assuming Derek Carr is willing to hold the ball more than 2 seconds. Then the offense will get there. They've got pieces. I'm a little bit worried about loss of Assembly. Trent Brown going from Dante Scarnecchia to Tom Cable is like going from dating Rihanna to dating me. I never want to compare myself to Tom Cable.
Don't do that.
Especially Tom Cable, because, you know,
I was a head coach of mine for a couple of years.
Okay, so. Well, we can talk after the show. But you know, this team got better. There's no other way to put it. They undeniably got better. They spent for it, but they got better.
They got better, but in the landscape of the AFC.
Oh, yeah. Good luck.
I don't.
Good night.
What I mean? Like, now, see, the one thing, though, Mina, that I looked at with these signings, that these signings gave them expectations, okay? And it's,
yes.
And it's expectations to me to realize that this still isn't a playoff team, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, are Raider fans going to be hurt by going 7-9, 8-8? Because they go 7-9, 8-8. That's a good season coming off
coming
what they
off
just
of what you know, they just
it's a great build up.
If the offense looks good, this is a winning season to
correct.
Me because the defense not going to be good. I'll tell you right now, this is not going to be a good defense.
But the expectation of the Raiders, this is you still got to fill some holes defensively.
Yep.
You can't rush the passer. Okay, you don't have a pass rush. The offensive line is still in the same. You remember you let Kelechi Osemele go in a trade with the Jets. So, you know, your offensive line that was your catalyst for many years is no longer the same. And then still, who's your running back?
Yeah.
Who's
By the way, Murray's gone. Who knows what's going to happen with Lynch?
Marshawn's might not coming back. I mean, they
should draft a guy.
Yeah, you got 3 picks in the first round. You got 4 in the first 90, I believe. So.
All right. Well, we got through a lot of teams, and now we're going to get to the most important part of the show.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
5 questions. First 4 from me. 5th, as always, from Lenny. I will honor his requests by reading it in his voice. Question number 1. If you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be and why?
If I'm an animal.
This is like a combine question.
Yeah, I'm a lion, man.
Really?
Yeah.
God, I wish I had the confidence to say like a cool animal.
Yeah, I'm a lion.
But why?
Yeah, because the lion, king of the jungle, baby. When that lion roar, you can hear that for miles on end.
What percentage of combine prospects do you think say lion when asked that question?
Probably not many. I think
really?
I think a lot of guys would say like a dog.
A dog?
Yeah.
Like I'm obedient. I'll do what you tell me to do, coach.
You know, like people, you know, I just, you know, you get down like a lot of dudes from down south. Hey, I'm a dog. I'm a dog.
Oh, I'm
man.
A dog. That
yeah,
kind of
I'm
dog.
I'm a dog.
Right,
you
that
know?
Inflection. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, if I was at the combine, I'd say something weird like, you know, I don't know, like a ferret. And then like every team would be out on me. Question number 2. I really like this question. I wrote it this morning. And I was proud of myself. If you put if Tom Brady got hurt and you put Nathan Peterman in the Patriots system, how many games would they win?
6.
Really?
Yeah.
E of little faith.
Yeah, what do you mean?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, six wins. I mean,
I just wanted
team,
you to say like 13 or something.
No, I saw it with Matt Castle, them go 11-5, and I think Peterman is half Castle. He's half a Castle.
Twice the size, though.
Yeah.
Question number three, who's finishing second in the AFC East this year?
AFC, who's finishing second? I'll go Buffalo.
Buffalo over New York.
Yeah, Buffalo over New York.
Are you a Josh Allen guy?
Yeah, I'm a Josh Allen guy, but I'm more of a Sean McDermott guy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I just loved McDermott. Obviously, look, Patriots are going to be there, but I like Buffalo at two.
Yeah.
Them at and then 3-4 is going to be a toss-up between Jets, Dolphins.
What?
It's just something about me wanting to see it first. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins won like 7 games. Ugh, you know what I mean?
It'd be so disappointing to me personally. Question four, would you rather give up cake or pie forever? It's another question I read this morning. I saw hungry.
I give up pie. I'd rather take cake.
Really?
Yeah, because you can go different cakes.
You go different pies?
Yeah, but
there's so many kinds of pie.
Man, I've seen a donut cake. I've seen a regular cake. You could do an ice cream cake.
Oh, I love
you
ice cream. I forgot about ice cream.
Pound cake.
I was thinking about ice cream cake.
You
as
could
a
do
kind
a
of
lemon
ice cream.
Cake. Yes, you could do, yes.
But when you put it under the cake category, that does change the dynamic for me because there's nothing like ice cream cake. Ice cream cake is the king of desserts, in my opinion.
That's what I'm saying, but cake, you can go a different genres of cakes.
But there's
cakes.
So many kinds of pie. And if you rule out pie, you're screwed at Thanksgiving.
But see,
you're like, oh great, I can't eat any dessert because nobody's going to make you a cake.
Right. But you know what? Who brought the ice cream cake? Let's open it up.
Nobody. You'd have to bring it yourself.
Think about it.
You're just gonna be that weird guy who brings cake everywhere.
Like pie is only a holiday dessert. Think about
it. Yeah. How often do you eat cake?
All the time. How many birthday parties you been to?
Not many.
I go to birthday parties all the time.
How often do you have kids?
I have kids. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So every week it's a holiday party.
That does change it big time because once you have kids, you eat a lot more cake.
A lot more cake.
See, that's why.
And
I
you start judging, like, man, you remember Timmy's party? Woo, that cake.
Should I have kids just so that I can start eating a lot of cake
every week?
Ice cream cake. Such an underrated aspect.
Every week it feels like
it's
a party.
True, it's expensive, costly, messy, time-consuming, but you get to eat
so
much
many.
Cake. Yeah. Okay, fifth question, as always, comes from Lenny. Aria's voice. Last thing in the podcast. I apologize. Please respect me after this. Kirk! I heard you describe yourself as a lion, the king of the jungle. How does that square up with you being on a 2-14 team? Wow. Rude.
I got you.
Really rude.
You
don't even know him.
I played Lenny. You know what? It's not even a bad question because sometimes you think the darkest moments in a man's career are actually the most, you learn the most about yourself. At 2-14, 2006 with the Raiders, I learned that to come to work, it's on you. Mm. It's not about the surroundings. It's not about what's going on. It's about you doing your job. And I had a group of guys that were there that made coming to work fun, even though we were 2-14.
Wow.
And I had the best time and the most fun in that year than I ever in any other year in the NFL. And why was that? Well, we had Hall of Famers on our team. You know, Randy Moss, Hall of Famer. Warren Sapp, Hall of Famer. I had these guys. And I'm like, man, you know, here I am. I hadn't, you know, I lost 3 games in high school. You know what I mean? College, we had, you know, San Diego State, we didn't really have a winning record, but it was a situation where I was going to the NFL. I was ready to change all this. And we get into a second year of my career at 2-14, but I watched Hall of Famers and how they went about their business. And I remember I had another guy, Derek Burgess. He was coming off a Super Bowl a couple years ago with the Eagles, and he's like, and I think we lost a couple games, and I was like, man, I hate this losing, man. Boy, you can't cry over that spilled milk. Like, go out there and go play football, man. Quit worrying about all that. They said, that's for them. He said, you got a job, you do your job. When you do your job, they're going to compensate you well. So his mindset really for me was like, I get it. This is your job. You got to show up. You're going to have some good days. You got some bad days. But if you're doing everything that you can possibly every single week, can't nobody say nothing bad about you. And remember, the name on the front, that's them. The name on the back, you don't want to be looking bad on TV. He said, because when you disrespect the name on your back, that go a long, long way. So that's why I always say it's hard when I hear the tank word.
Wow. Take that, Lenny. You thought you were sassing him with your question, but he turned it on you. He delivered a lesson. Really, you should rethink the next time you go up against Kirk Morrison. Thank you so much, though, for coming
All good, man. Thank you for having me. Again, we'll do this again. This is the pre-draft portion. We'll do this after the OTAs.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah. After OTAs, right after draft, all that stuff. When it's like, when they're looking, we call it the dog days on NFL radio.
Okay.
The dog days
of summer. That's great for a podcast co-hosted by a dog. It's perfect. Appreciate it.